Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's a chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim, and hi, people out there. And we've got a gray, rainy day here in Vancouver, but that's not the case in the stock market today. Being Friday, it's up nicely. So
we have several questions to get to today. Our first one comes from Justin in Berkeley. An interesting discussion on Twitter on Mish Shedlock's stream about population decline and economics. Does economic decline and deflation precede an eventual negative demographic growth? Or is this just a chicken and egg discussion? I'm thinking of Japan as an example. Deflationary crash led to demographic malaise. Yes, in Japan, where the birth of a child in some villages is worthy of the news because they happen so rarely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a comprehensive issue, and who was the guy at Elliott Wave Theory? Can't think of his name, but one of the bull markets back in the 80s is driven by everybody who was about to retire, and as you retired, you bought stocks for retirement, but anyways, the Elliott Wave guy did a really thorough study on demographics, and it pointed out that in a if the crash is severe enough, it affects the demographics rather than the demographics affecting the stock market. And I went along with that. I'd maybe have been trying to put something together on that, but you can have a population cannot be growing or whatever. When it's time for a great financial mania, it will happen. And when it exhausts itself, it crashes and down it goes. And then also, as Justin points out, that Japan's population growth flattened after their big financial boom into 1980 when Japanese speculators were roaring around the world buying all kinds of trophy properties like Pebble Beach Golf Course in California, stuff like that. But it's an interesting subject.
Our second question comes from Michael. Hi, Bob and Jim. It seems like everyone is shorting the U.S. dollar, even though there's an accelerating liquidity problem worldwide. For example, the U.S. dollar is at a two-year low against the Swiss franc, even though the Swiss National Bank is bailing out big Swiss banks and is borrowing heavily from the U.S. Fed's currency swap window. Bob, is the market operating under a false narrative?
Yeah, we've seen a whole lot of negative headlines about the U.S. dollar. And then I saw one last week about Argentina, and it was announced that they were scorning the dollar and doing a transaction for some trade goods priced in yuan, the Chinese currency. And then you read about the article. It seems that they didn't have enough U.S. dollars in there. And they reserve in order to transact. So, of course, they're going to get against the dollar. And then there's some who just don't like it. And then you got the gold bugs who have gone on the story that it's going to crash and go to zero. What I can point out here is that the history of the senior currency in a post-bubble condition, and every time where you've got the data, it shows that the senior currency becomes chronically strong against most currencies in the post-bubble world. And I looked around for an exploration of that and then gradually figured it out that when London was the financial center and the pound was the reserve unit, most of the debt was written in London, due and payable in sterling. And then, of course, since the 1930s, it's been New York and the dollar. So if all you need is a majority of the debt that is written in the financial mania to be due and payable in dollars into New York, it's so the debt bubble itself is a huge short position in dollars. And most of the articles I see coming out of New York and wherever, you know, the big names, they haven't figured it out yet. But so far, the dollar index, the DX, has been essentially building. It's had some ups and downs, but it's beginning to look like maybe about a six-month base. And then we'll watch and see if the DX goes above the 20-week moving average, then that concludes that pattern successfully. And then the other hand, you just got to put your finger up in the air and see that in the fall the wind could be blowing adverse gales, in which case the dollar will go up. Now, remember, the last major hit to the credit markets ended in late September or October, and the DX got up to 114.75 and very overbought then. So let's just let the U.S. dollar, the DX, build its basing pattern, and then which I watch all the time. So the surprise will be a firming U.S. dollar.
Second question for Bob from Michael. Many gold bugs predict that gold will break out over $2,100 and head to $3,500. However, history would suggest that maybe gold will have at least a temporary pullback, assuming markets sell off this fall due to liquidity problems, given another 35% equity market sell-off. Can we expect the typical 20% pullback in gold that usually accompanies equity market crashes? Is this time to temporarily lighten up on gold miners and silver?
Yeah, some of the gold stocks have done well, and yeah, good traders could take some money off the table, but we would be buying on the dips on the gold stocks because the sector is in a lengthy bull market. And yeah, when the big market's going to get whacked, maybe this fall, it would jam down the gold stocks. But over the next few years, gold stocks may not just be going up, but they could be outperforming the S&P. So if you've got the GDXJ outperforming the S&P, and you got some fund managers there who normally wouldn't include golds in their portfolio, if they've got a sector that's outperforming, they're going to have to get long. So the story will build on itself once it gets going. And I had a good conversation with a guy yesterday. Bob, when is it going to get going? You can't say. The best thing is to have the potential path ahead, which is improving earnings for gold. And you don't need to have gold going up in U.S. dollar terms for a bull market in gold stocks. All you need is to have the costs of mining gold declining relative to the bullion cost. So in the last 6 months, the price of crude oil has fallen something like 70% relative to gold. So if you're operating a gold mine and you're using all kinds of crude oil derivatives, you know, you got huge diesel trucks, you got shovels and power shovels, you got mill to run, and you got hydrocarbons you need for blasting agents. So if those costs are going down, the gold miners are making money, and I love it.
A friend of the show that we, of course, have on as a regular guest, Sean Broderick, pointed out to us that the Silver Institute says there's huge demand for silver. They are way behind in mining in meeting that demand. In other words, if you have a silver certificate, there may not be actual physical silver to back it up.
And Jim, that's the true blue silver bug. There's been a shortage of supply of silver every year for as long as I've been in the financial markets. And it's not a good way of analyzing things. In a post-bubble contraction, the price of silver falls relative to gold. So you don't want to be long any silver stocks. Gold stocks are the place to be.
Question from Andrew. What are Bob's thoughts about the inverted yield curve? The spread reached its maximum on the downside in March, and since then has bounced, breaking the downtrend it had been in for 2 years. So, your thoughts on the inverted yield curve?
Oh, yeah, curve. Let's just really work this one over, because the yield curve is the difference in interest rates between long end and short end. And in a boom, short rates rise because of tremendous demand for borrowing money and all that sort of stuff. And when short rates get higher than long rates, it's called an inverted curve. And I've got the charts on the U.S. yield curve back to 1857. So it covers all those business cycles, plus the 1873 bubble, plus 1929 bubble. And there are two rules to derive. Get the yield curve inverted, you got a recession. And if the action as the curve inverts gets pretty dynamic, the more severe the recession. So, and we've had both. And now what people are looking at is that the aversion has passed its extreme and is beginning to roll over. And so people are thinking, oh, gosh, it's not as inverted anymore, so it doesn't matter. All you need is the inversion, and then you get the recession. So it's inevitable.
Andrew also has a second part to his question. Also, great call on gold, which is doing very well in this time of turmoil in the banking sector. How many more balance sheets will fold before the Fed reverses course?
Let's just note that the Fed is not creating interest rate policy. It's following the rise in short rates, as it does in any business cycle. But the street likes to believe in the Fed and its miracles and stuff like that. So if you look at the 6 months T-bill yield, it reached its highest, I think, about 3 months ago. I just only started to look at this last update on this last night. And the six-month yield is no longer going up, and yet you've had the Fed do another rate hike. And that's what happened in 1929. The six-month yield rose until about June of 1929, and then it rolled over and was heading down. And you had the Fed raise its interest rates in August. And then you had the crash, so that the Fed lowered its rate at the end of that October. So this is working out. The 6 month yield is declining a little, and the Fed is still increasing its rate. So I think something similar is going to happen. The 6 month rate will decline more, and then the Fed will realize it has to be cutting rates. And don't take an interest rate cut as being good news for the stock market. If you look at interest rates in the stock market, you get the fastest decline in short rates with the fastest plunges in the stock market. So it's an ancient one. Short rates go up with the boom, and short rates go down with the bust. And that's all the way it is. So actually, we're looking for the T-bill rates to get down towards zero and the Fed funds rate to get down to 0.25% or some damn fool thing like that, somewhere within the next year. And it'll be fun to watch.
Bob will take a look at some interesting headlines when we return.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Here's some headlines that caught Bob's attention today. Argentina shuns the U.S. dollar, will pay for imports in Chinese yuan.
Yeah, that's the Argentina one I mentioned that they're condemning the dollar because they haven't got enough of them.
Argentina's official inflation rate is 100%. If you put money in an Argentinian bank today, they'll pay you 81% interest. But will there be any money to pay you that interest?
No. And there's more headlines here.
Yes. So. Headline, J.P. Morgan wins on First Republic. That's one of the three banks that went under in the U.S.
I love that because it wins. So they got to take over the wreckage. And again, it reminds of 1930, when in September, October 1930, the first bank run started in the U.S., and it was a Caldwell banking group in, southeast states, Tennessee and whatnot. So that's where it started. So let's put it this way. The first year after a bubble, you can see some bank failures, and you will see where a bigger bank takes over a lesser bank. And that was the case in Europe as well, because in 1929-1930, the authorities in Europe were encouraging then a big bank, Credit Anstalt, to bail out the banks that were in trouble. And then in May of 1931 is when then Credit Anstalt was discovered as being insolvent. So now who knows whether J.P. Morgan will go insolvent, but I just call this step one. And step two, step one is where small banks fail and are taken over by big banks. Step two will be when the big banks fail.
Right. Another related headline, First Republic's jumbo mortgages brought on the bank's failure, and the failure of Silicon Valley was blamed on loans to left-wing causes. But I think First Republic's mortgages were New York-based, and you'd think that's not left-wing at all when it comes to business there.
Yeah, well, they all took on too much debt, and bankers will always do that. And then they find out that in a boom, rates go up, so then servicing the debt gets difficult, and then they try have liquidity problem, and this is where we are now. These headlines are on a path to a more severe credit contraction.
Well, you talked about the mortgage problems for First Republic. Another headline here, Blackstone's Real Estate Trust limits withdrawals for sixth straight month. Try saying that fast five times.
Indeed. Now, Blackstone, of course, is a huge, prestigious outfit and real estate portfolio and stuff like that. And institutions and around the world were placing money with them, and they were then turned buying real estate. And then it goes the other way. Customer wants their money back, and these guys then have to sell a piece of real estate to get some money. And then what happens is that all the investors in the real estate game are essentially doing the same thing. So the problem is there's no one that can really take on the real estate. And years ago, Jim Grant at Grant's Interest Rate Advisor, he did a summary on the what happened to real estate in Manhattan after 1929, and I think it was the Excelsior Life Building. And he just listed the whole history of it. And so it wasn't just each equity holder in the Excelsior Life Building that went broke. It was the mortgage lenders, too. And this went on from 1929 until the early 50s. And then eventually the whole system washed itself out and started to recover a little, but the post-bubble contractions, no matter whether you're in real estate, stocks, commodities, or whatever, it can be very difficult.
Our last headline, Cuba cancels May Day parade amid fuel shortages. I'm sure that was a sad day for you, Comrade Hoy. and, you know, why do you need trucks and cars and floats for a parade? You know, marching bands and just smiling people waving, that's a terrific parade, isn't it?
Oh, but the military side of communism has to show its force.
They got to run out their tanks.
Here they were. They didn't have enough money. Now, this is more than just Cuba, because for decades, even longer, generations, the Soviet Union has been funding Cuba, trying to keep their government alive. So what this says is that the Soviet Union is no longer funding Cuba. Maybe they can eventually have the right kind of revolution reform in Cuba. I hope so.
Well, the people are very industrious and creative. I just watched a documentary on how they get around government limits on things. And they're nice, friendly people. People who holiday there say the people are very nice, but there are shortages. And they suggest that you bring toiletries to trade with the locals because they don't have any.
Right.
Bob, always a pleasure to chat with you.
Good stuff, Jim, and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.